This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning and welcome to Free Left Turn, our left wing's perspective here on Free FM 89.0 independent community media. Kia ora, Fred.
Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Beautiful sunny day. Yeah.
Crikey. It sure is.
Yeah. And I had my fingers crossed, no coughing fit. No, there it is.
There it goes.
There it goes.
Spoke too soon. That's the bad fairy's got you.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it was a nice day also yesterday, and me, Margaret and Nicola went to the base.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. Traumatic experience.
Yeah, we went there because I...
So you went to Te Awa?
No, God, no. one place we did go into was quite insane was Rebel Sports because Nicola required goggles for swimming.
Okay.
And we also then went into Whitcourt's because I needed to buy some things for what we call Dirty Santa for our end of year.
Dirty Santa's sort of probably put quite a different spin on the Christmas tree.
Yeah, so I didn't go to the girly magazine star, Fred.
No. Only for the articles.
Haven't read one of those for years. No, so just to buy, because the concept is that you win something, you win a quiz and get a gift at work. You could trade it, whatever.
It's a bit of fun.
So you didn't have to buy anything expensive.
But you survived a traumatic experience.
We parked up near where the buses go into for the Comet and the Pukete and Te Rapa buses go.
Yeah.
And there was not too bad there, but further on, I think you'd be struggling to get out within 2 minutes.
Well, I told you guys about, must have been a month ago now, first time in my life I went to Te Awa, and it was probably the last time unless I'm forced to go in there.
I've only been once, never again.
It's fine, and it's a retail shopping centre, but it's just food court.
It's just bedlam, it's just chaos.
If you go there a certain time and walk through there... particularly during around about midday, and I just call it feeding time at the zoo. To be frank,
It just shows you how
commercialised.
When you call it a buy all the time, we're just a purchasing
consumers.
Society, consumer
society.
We just that's what we do.
Just consume.
And no wonder China. You know, everyone goes, "Wonder why China's risen so fast."
Because we're buying their goods.
So we make all this butter that we can't afford if you're locals, unless you're a farmer or at the top end of society. But in return we bring in all the stuff in.
The thing from that is the packaging and all that stuff that goes with these sorts of purchases. Where does it go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, like I just noticed China's put out a working paper because this is what they do. They don't just think about the next election. One of their, I can't remember, it's 15-year. No, it might be only a five-year plan. This one is how they've got to try and balance their exports and import. exports out, imports in, because they have a surplus of $1 trillion
wow.
each year.
Yeah.
So I think it's
the envy of every country on the planet.
Yeah, but they're saying they need to get that balance back into kilter, you know, because I say, so it's just interesting. Yeah,
that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
So buy, you know, trying to buy local and do more local consumerism and tourism and
they've had those sort of campaigns in the past. They had them over here and they've had them in the UK or buy British buyers.
Yeah, but this is the opposite.
The problem is the domestic stuff is dearer than the stuff that comes
and
in.
This is the opposite. This isn't because this is the try and they export so much that the balance has got out of kilter, you know? So whereas we always struggled our balance of payments to have a surplus. You know,
Because they were talking. You know how Trump was punishing nations around the world would have a sort of an equilibrium around.
This is the government of the United States of America, i.e., Mr. Trump on his own.
Yeah. Try to get that balance between exports and imports, what do they say? New Zealand exports a lot to the United States, but what does that balance with what we buy from the United States?
No. I wouldn't think it does at all.
No, it doesn't.
No.
Talked about, I don't know.
What do we get? Caterpillar, you get bulldozers. Oh, sorry, we do import a lot of ideology. In other words, America for America, but
Yeah, there was a program I used to watch through YouTube and it was based out of one of the Carolinas and they actually came to New Zealand to purchase those big long sawing chainsaws that cut timber.
Oh yeah,
because they made in Tauranga.
Okay,
so they actually came
like a portable mill.
Portable mill, that's what it was. Yeah.
They came and were very good at it. Yeah,
they came particularly to this country to purchase it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to probably purchasing locally.
And one in America.
Yeah. And they spoke highly of that stuff.
Yeah.
So it's down to the quality of goods America's selling them, perhaps.
But I think the main thing that we export there is meat. Yeah. Meat and whatever else. And I thought I heard it was $1 billion, but do we buy $1 billion of stuff out of the United States? So
I'll try and remember to look it up for next week.
Yeah.
And get the trade defense.
Yeah, you talk about the Chinese 5-year plan balancing imports and exports.
Yeah.
Mm. That's interesting.
So that shows you the success of their
economy.
And so, I'll tell you what, just on that, the Japanese, there won't be too many Chinese tourists going to Japan for a while. There's a real spat going on with the new Maggie Thatcherite Japanese Prime Minister. What's his name? Takashi Tito or something like that. And so anyway, she made these comments that she's all in with Taiwan, which has upset the Chinese. And I'm summarising here, but it's really upset the Chinese because don't forget the Japanese were pretty brutal to the Chinese pre Second World War and during the Second World War.
Yeah, just one word, Nanking.
Well, yeah, and amongst others. It's like Taiwan, of course. Japan was occupied. They got it ceded in a war, and they had it for 50 years, from 1895 to 1945. The end of the war? 1945.
Yeah, they occupied the Korean Peninsula from 1910.
So they were a colonial power for a while, Japan.
Yeah. And a brutal one.
And that's what the Chinese are upset with, for saying, hang on a minute, after the Second World War, you said you learnt your lesson, you were going to stay out of being a military power. Enough for self-defence was the Yanks. We know it's from America, has been pushing them to be more militaristic, I think. Because America loves other people fighting their wars for them, you know.
Yeah, they do.
And they just profit out of the arms sales.
Because the whole thing about that Japanese or that Sino-Japanese relationship, there's been no kind of, I don't even there's been even a lukewarm apology for what the Japanese
did. No, and that's what the Chinese, if you go to Chinese media, they're very upset about it. And not just the Chinese media, the population is upset about it. Because there wouldn't be too many Chinese who didn't have an ancestor that wasn't killed or affected by the goings-on, the Second World War. It's in sort of recent memory. There'll be people alive that even if their grandparents have died would have told them about it.
You know? There's enough
living memory. Film as well. But living memory is often more effective in a way.
People just brutalised.
That's caused a hornet's nest, so to speak.
I bet you it would.
Mm.
Yeah, it's one of those, that Taiwan stuff, eh?
Yeah.
And it is, theoretically, it is Chinese territory.
And of course, if everything was fair in the world, and America hadn't sort of kept it as a sort of a military base against China, you would have thought eventually that the Chinese would have said, "Oh, Taiwan, you can be an autonomous nation." You know,
a bit like
what happened in Hong Kong, of course, for years. But of course, China sort of doesn't want to lose face, so it still wants it back because it's part of China. Mm-hmm. Considered it's part, mm-hmm. and they are Chinese. But it goes back.
Mm-hmm.
Is it if a people is separate, like the South Island? If South Island has wanted to declare independence from the North New Zealand, is it fair if the large majority of them want to do it?
Yeah.
And would you fight to stop them, or would you go? Well, actually, that's the majority population want to do it.
Nations get antsy when there's talk of secession.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah,
antsy because the sovereignty causes a whole string of problems.
It's an interesting subject. To me, it's a subject we should be talked about more because we talk about wars and that. But we should be talking about what do the populations think? Yeah. You know, Ukraine, Russia. What did the populations think? Before this happened, recent times, and even go back in history, the populations seem to be just used as pawns. They're
just led around by the nose.
And others are dying. It's not the children who have shares in the military complex and making money hand over fist. It's the peasants that do the dying.
That's always been
made.
The case.
Nothing's
changed.
No.
Just the means by which you...
Yeah, well, and a good classical example is the knights in shining armour. They had armour, and the peasant had to carry the sword behind him with no armour.
Maybe some boiled leather.
but a leather, you know. I'll be all right. So, yeah.
The old squire and the old page boy.
So the knights tend to survive, and, you know, they had a more chance of surviving, of course. Yeah.
Probably not against the old Welsh archers.
Eventually, the old
longbow
technology.
Yeah,
the old longbow, go straight through you like a dose of salts.
Is that when they decided that the leaders of these armies who wanted to go to war started going charge and they were doing it 10 miles behind?
Oh, that
might have happened about the time of the longbow.
I think we were talking about this last week.
Yeah, of course.
that's old Douglas Hay. Lead
from behind.
Yeah. Oh, they've got something. I might get killed now. I think I'll just step back.
One of the war poets made a sarcastic comment about Douglas Haig and sending all our troops to the front. And where was he?
No, it's easy. Yeah, and then that's to me the tragedy of war. There's so much money in it that it's not like what do the people want. It's like, okay, how can we stir up this animosity?
Where's the incentive to stop war?
Yeah, and it's very easy. I'm the one who sells the weapons, and you two have disagreements. It's very easy to throw a bit of time and money into it to make you guys hate each other.
Play both sides.
Yeah, and play both sides, and then we're off. You know, you see it. It'd be crude in law. You know, you have two lawyers fighting for their clients. It's very easy to feed if the client's got some money. It's very easy to profit out of it. On the animosity between each other, and who wins? Lawyers.
Lawyers always win.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the war industry wins.
Mm. Yeah. Which are families. You know, when you see families driving around in a big car, or they're doing all this, the chances are they've got shares and that profit from war.
Yeah. The classic one for that, and then we go back to the Second World War, was the Krupp.
On the European side and the English side, the American side.
To see who made say the Messerschmitt, for example, or who made the Hurricane.
I didn't read it, but it said five big families that profit from war in America. And I've still got it on my list to read. But there's an awful lot of money to be made, and if you have, you know, you've got shares in these things. You don't want these wars to stop. And what's stopping the Ukraine-Russian peace deal? Probably the money people. Because why would you want it to stop? If your children aren't dying, your grandchildren aren't dying, why would you want it to stop? You know?
And those same individuals, those same companies also own construction companies.
Well, the same families. Yeah.
So they're making money.
Oh, of course.
Doesn't matter which way.
So when they do agree, they go, oh, well, now we'll do the we'll supply the concrete or the asphalt or the demining equipment or, you know.
Yeah.
And the world's still tooling up, including New Zealand buying, you know, attack helicopters. And we're going, aren't we going to spend a whole lot of money up in Devonport?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get onto that, Mac.
Get onto that, Mac. Yeah, yes, we'll do that one now.
Yeah.
While it's here. I heard this on the news. What was it? How many billion was it?
It's quite a lot.
Yeah.
Up to 4 billion.
Yeah, 4 billion.
This was in the Herald on Thursday. Yeah, prone to failure, billions pledged to fix ageing defence infrastructure.
Yeah. See.
So let me just. I might be missing something. But so we're going to do up a base that's in the middle of a city, and if we do have a war, someone and they've got supersonic weapons, etc.
Which means we'll get taken out.
So why are we doing that exactly?
But it seems they find the money for military expenditure, but then
not the ferries.
Not the ferries, or the health, or
the housing,
all the other stuff. But they find the money for
this. We're tooling up. Now, who's making the commissions behind all that?
There'll be some fat cats.
But
we buy into it. We go, we need it. We need it, you know?
Do we?
Well, how do you defend yourself?
They're selling this, eh? This is Associate Defence Minister Chris Pink. This is in the Thursday's paper, confirming investment priorities for the $2.5 billion of funding devoted to the Defence Estate Portfolio Plan 2025 to 2040. Security concerns, maintain asset usefulness as far as practicable, especially of assets critical to military outputs, blah, blah, blah.
You would think that having a naval base in a near a major city is actually a no-no.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Well, yeah, exactly. Americans do too, because they've got a naval base at San Diego,
San Diego.
Why do you have naval bases near big cities?
Yeah, it's a bit like if you had... Because we were Scarborough Flow in the north of Scotland.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. So why would...
So they're finding the money for this.
There was a problem with Scarborough Flow.
What was that?
Scotch whiskey, you know. It was obviously had too much to drink while the German submarine came in.
Exactly. I think the German naval fleet in the First World War scuttled at Scarborough Flow.
Down there, right. Still down there.
Yeah.
The Grand Fleet was scuttled.
Yeah, German Grand Fleet.
But again, they find money for this.
And who's our enemy?
Who's our enemy? And even if they did, how are we going to defend ourselves? We're a small country with a large coastal area.
But
we don't have the resources to...
Our best defence is we've got how many thousands of miles of kilometres of sea around us.
Mm. Yeah.
Even Australia. If Australia, say we fell out with Australia because it started beating us at rugby all the time or something, you know.
Has that been a natural disaster?
And we fell out. But it's not easy to launch an operation. Look at D-Day and they're going across the English Channel and look at China and Taiwan. China can't just march in there. It's not a 200-yard-metre ditch. It's a sea, you know. It's very difficult to launch an invasion from a long way away.
Yeah.
And even an armada of ships. You know, you've got brought an armada over like the old
Spanish
armada, etc. You've got no shelter for them. They're sitting ducks for it, you know, all the way across an empty sea, basically.
Yeah.
Their argument here is just infrastructure has fallen behind. It's dilapidated.
Which creates jobs.
Priorities.
Yeah. Yeah, what's their priority? And I say, they imply that it's China, you know, all the time, and yet we trade with them. Who do we make our money at? Who buys all our products?
Yeah.
China, you know? And what has China ever said, we want to take over? Your biggest threat to New Zealand is probably just another colonisation by one of the countries that's got lots of people. You know?
E.g. India.
India or China, still got a big population, other countries. But, you know, New Zealand's only got 5 point something million people. 1% of India's population is 1.5 billion, which is 15 million.
Mm.
So they could, you know, it could easily happen. You know,
quite easily,
and that's not necessarily wrong, but that's
the way.
That's what happened to Māori. That's what you know, and it could happen again.
Yeah. We all know that.
Migration. Yeah, it can happen.
Well, basically, these facilities are falling down. It's been neglected for decades, and now they want.
But if you, but really, they say everything's falling down. But if you're actually to me, what our military should be doing is have some discipline, sure, but they should know how to drive a digger. They should know how to drive.
Get involved in civil defence.
They should be there for response to create, you know, protect public property if there is a breakdown.
Yeah, the argument he puts forward is spurious. It's like failure to act will result in facility closures, degraded training, and increased risk to personnel. Yes, if the facilities aren't safe, but regenerating the estate is essential to maintain a high-level operational readiness. It's just the old blah-blah business.
Well, they're still stuck in the World War One mentality of, you know, let's support the empire.
Yeah, you could send a missile into there and that would be it.
Just take it out.
Well, one missile, boom, gone.
Yeah, you know, and
we don't have the resources, we don't, you know.
No. So why,
why can't we be neutral like Switzerland and maybe just say
and make money, hand over fist,
and supply military equipment and personnel for civil defence or humanitarian?
I do agree. We need a response boats, etc., to go out to the islands if they need their help.
Not necessarily for war.
Humanitarian relief, like we have done. Because we won't be able to fight. If it's a nasty war, you can fight a civil.
Well, we've only got six vessels. Two. One sank last year, and two, I think, have been out of commission for some time. Yeah. So we're down to three. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And you look at the Israeli. We'll talk about them in a minute. Maybe the Ukraine and the Russians. They're still basically fighting what I call a gentleman's war, generally, because they're fighting soldiers are fighting soldiers. They're killing the odd civilian, but it's not their target.
They're killing them a lot more than the odd civilian.
Yeah, but nothing compared to what the Israelis are doing.
No, nothing.
Just in Sudan, etc. Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting at is if we have a bad war...
They're falling some engagements of war.
Yeah, but if we have a bad war, this will be about supersonic, this will be about nuclear, this will be, you know, do we really want to be, we're the ally of the United States in the middle of our biggest population city?
We'll just send one supersonic missile under here. Bang, gone.
Yeah. So I just think that's just warmongering. I don't know what we're doing it for.
I was
quite surprised as I read your article, Mick. Mm-hmm. Several examples were included, such as how a 90-bed barrack block at the Papakura military camp was closed because roof leaks causing black mould. That's been around for bloody years, the Papakura military camp. My old man did his compulsory military training there.
Yeah.
So for decades it's been like this.
I don't know. I thought.
And they do need to have a fix the buildings and all that.
Personnel should be living in substandard.
No.
This whole thing should have been closed years ago.
Yeah.
And you do your military training at Wairua or Trentham.
Yeah.
Or Ohakia.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, why? Yes.
It's all part of us tooling up, and we've
tooling up, yeah.
And we've bought into American pressure that you're with us or against us, blah blah blah.
And then we get on the phone, we'll support you, Uncle Sam, And then we go to the Chinese. Oh, would you like to buy some more butter? And they're meant to be our enemy. America's not doing it as a quantity that the Chinese are doing, as far as being our purchaser.
I don't think the Chinese have slapped any tariffs on us, have they?
No, and they haven't threatened us. They haven't. When have we heard China's saying to us, come on, you've got to do what we say or we'll take you out? No.
They'd rather do business with you.
Of course they would. Yes. It's a win-win. Whereas America's still, not just Americans, but the West, the status quo in the West is still stuck in this World War One, World War Two.
Old empire stuff.
It does. Might not be the UK that's the empire, but we're still stuck in that mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're superior. It's supremacy. We're still stuck in supremacist mindset.
Colonialism and all that stuff.
Hey, I've got to leave. I'm going to...
Oh, we've got a vacant chair.
Yeah. Are you playing truant?
Yeah. Goodbye. See you next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
See you next week. That was sort of
goodbye. Yeah. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
See you, Peter Sellers.
Have a good trip.
Thanks. Yeah. Don't drive too fast.
I see you got some junk mail on your desk there.
Yes, the New Zealand... Oh, no, I thought you were talking about the New Zealand Herald.
Well, that too, but...
Oh, yeah,
I've been getting what I call, consider spam mail from the National Party on my email line.
Yeah, we got this in our letterbox.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the party. The party that is getting New Zealand back on track. But I thought that was something around the realms of sliding down the clay track. and that I think US grunge band called the Butthole Surfers.
Right.
No, they're talking about rebuilding the economy, health,
education,
restoring law and order. But I think what some people have actually pointed out is that we've grown certain things, but not what National think we've grown.
Well, no, law and order. I would say law and disorder is on the growth industry.
Yeah.
Social inequality.
More people in prison.
Antisocial behaviour.
Yeah. We've got growth in unemployment. Lack of job opportunities for many people.
Lack of housing for people.
Yeah, and we can go on and on and on. But they've put in this thing here, what I call skite points, which to me doesn't make much sense at all. Delivered tax relief to hardworking Kiwis for the first time in 14 years.
Really? I know one person who ended up with an extra 20 cents.
Yeah.
Because it was based on your wages and the percentage. And yeah, and this person got an extra 20 cents.
Slashed wasteful spending, cutting inflation and driving down mortgage rates.
Really? Slashed wasteful spending? They kiboshed the ferries and they now have spent all that time and money and it's going to be exactly the same, or if not more. That's time waste of time and resources.
Didn't they create money? The Ministry of Regulation, which also has cost a lot of money?
Yeah, another hierarchy of bureaucracy.
Yeah. Introduce family boost payments of up to 40% to ease childcare costs, but not everybody is eligible for it.
No.
You can go on.
It's all sleight of hand stuff. It's all sound bites, PR stuff.
Okay, what have we done here? Increased police patrols. Well, I don't think I've seen many around in Hamilton.
I have to...
Not for...
I've been in Hamilton East. There's been bobbies on the beat and in town. I've seen a couple of occasions. They're few and far between, but there have been some police on the beat, as we used to say.
So, and this one here. Brought back consequences for crime with tougher sentences and three strikes for repeat offenders. So that tells me that we are growing the prison population.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And then if it gets too bad, we can't run it, we'll privatise it.
Yeah, and basically, so we have to pay more of our taxes to look after prisoners inside.
Mm.
Yeah,
you get a better deal in some respects than some old age pensioners.
Yeah, who may have to wait for somebody to clean them up after they've done a mess.
Well, yeah. In the prison, you get free dental care, free access to a GP, you get three square meals a day, you got heat.
You got facilities to keep you fit.
Yeah. Some people don't have that.
No, not out in the big world. Well, that's why some people like to return back to prison.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes on. I think this is just a skite list.
Yeah. I see it on my... I just think, no, you guys are just lying.
But I think that the most serious concern that we have in recent days was the potential ending of regional councils.
Yeah, I caught this. It was in both papers. This was in the Waikato Times on Wednesday, and the headline reads, "Radical changes announced. Regional councils are set to be gutted in the biggest shake-up of local government since 1989. Mm. And Potlogger says that the regional councils are to be scrapped and replaced with boards made up of local mayors under a radical new proposal from the government. This would change who makes decisions on public transport, the environment, emergency management, rivers, lakes, coastal marine, asset management, air quality, etc., etc. It goes on and on that regional councils deal with. And the change was announced by RIM Minister Chris Bishop and Local Government Minister Simon Watts. Yes, it would be the biggest reform to local government in decades and would open the way to more councils amalgamated into unitary authorities like Auckland did in the 2000s.
I actually, when I first heard it, I smelt a rat.
Well, the first thing I thought was, this is undermining democracy. Because we just voted our regional council in the recent elections. And these regional councils will be replaced by 11 combined territory boards made up of the mayors of those cities, of those areas, I presume. Mayors would have their votes weighted to population somewhat so that the mayors of larger cities would have more power than their fellow mayors of smaller towns, but some protection would be built in for small towns to make sure large city mayors didn't dominate, meaning voters in smaller towns would have more power than those in large cities. But if they're getting rid of the boards, how are we going to be involved in it?
No, we won't be. No.
Exactly. Bishop said this is a strong, he claims there's a strong lobby for more unitary authorities to merge on the reforms, reflecting the government's greater drive to amalgamate councils. This is getting towards this fast-tracking stuff, I think.
The
change would see a Crown observer have complete control over local decision-making, with one of the options giving power to the Crown to override decisions made by the board. So, I smell a rat.
One of my other fears is, what does it mean for the environment?
Well, that'll go out the door.
Because that comes back.
Because that'd be inconvenient. They've already stated quite clearly, if a tree frog, native tree frog, gets in the way of the tree frog goes.
Yeah.
It's business as usual. It's about commercial interests and business interests. Yeah. And it's, go ahead, full steam ahead, damn the torpedoes sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's one of the fears. And I feel, and even the makeup of these, makeup of these board of mayors, how many people would have vested interest
exactly
in the dairying industry?
And how will anyone be able to find out if there's a conflict of interest?
Yeah, very much so.
Because I'm just really suspicious.
Yeah, I'm highly suspicious. And I know it says it in the, they can do it under the local government, but how come it's come about now? As opposed to, say, under the previous government?
Yeah. I hope this will become one of the election issues, eh?
Yeah.
Nobody won't, but it should do.
Nobody's going to tell me what protections are going to be there and for environment. That's what nobody's telling me that.
I mean, it's very scant on detail.
Yeah, very much.
It's just sound bites and old. The current system is convoluted, too cumbersome, blah, 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 and it may well be. But at least at the moment, we've still got some safeguards about the environment. And
Could it also be seen as a further erosion of Indigenous rights?
Could well be. It could be applied. It could be applied across the board, couldn't it? Depending on what commercial interests might be at stake, or it could be everybody and anybody. But you're quite right. It could have a go at Indigenous rights.
Given that one of these people in this picture here was one of the people behind the anti Three Waters stuff.
Yeah,
with racist rhetoric.
So there's a bias in there straight away, isn't it?
Yeah. So at least we know that at least one of the regional councils, the Wellington one, voted to retain Maori wards. So with the prospect or the spectre of the regional councils going,
that'll go.
And
I can't see these same individuals keeping those Maori wards.
No, they won't. They won't. And will they have a Maori voice on these boards?
And even if they did, they'd be considered a dissenting voice. They'd be opposed to any the council would be opposed to any decision those Maori wards might want to make.
Yeah,
and could be kiboshed by this Crown observer.
Yeah, yeah. unless you look at the amount, how many wards would you? Oh no, how many councils have a Maori mayor or a say Pacifica mayor, for example?
Northland, isn't it? Was it?
No, we got Tanya Tapsell from Rotorua,
right.
But she's pro-national.
Right.
We got.
I thought it was a Maori mayor up Northland somewhere.
No, I don't know.
Right, okay, I
could have thought. There may have been, but I haven't checked that one out.
Right. Well, few and far between.
Yeah, and we know that the Waikato Regional Council has a Maori representative on that, and that didn't require a Maori ward decision.
Hmm. But that sort of position would go because he or she would be seen as an obstacle for vested interest trying to push through an agenda.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. That's why I smell a rat. Yeah. I don't trust these people.
No.
And what they're up to. I think regional councils to me sound like they were that kind of bastion that protected the environment.
Yeah, well, certainly some individuals in our regional council done their best to try and protect the environment.
Yeah, we saw on the news they spoke to he must be the chairperson of ECAN, right. Environment Canterbury, and the way he sounded, he wasn't not in favour of this idea, and he was saying also us on this particular regional council we have a particular type of skill which you don't normally find. Right. At other,
and that could be lost. If this goes ahead.
Well, so what happens to these people? Do they serve out their term,
and then
they're gone?
Well, yeah. There's no mention in the article whether the existing council will see out their current term since they've just been elected back in.
Yeah, and it's funny that you can also add a racist spin on this.
Mm.
The decisions are being made by two white men in white European men in business suits.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't bode well.
No, not at all. So watch your space. I think people can make submissions to this, but then again,
well, given their track record on public submissions to select committees, it's not good.
Yeah, because basically. One example that we could use was the regulatory standards bill,
where that was rushed through.
Yeah, and the submissions were, I think they totaled, I think 95 or 90% opposed it.
Yeah.
But it still becomes law.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
We live in a democracy, they say.
Yeah.
No,
it's democracy for some.
Yeah, but not for
everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't bode well.
Yeah, so what else you got there, Mick?
Well, the Health Minister, I refuse to name him because I just can't stand him. But anyway, the headline reads, Government vows to fix decades of delay on unified patient records. They're going to introduce or want to introduce a single electronic medical record so patients will not have to keep retelling different health professionals their medical problems and so on. And I've been quite happy when you see one person and you get referred to another person and they want to hear from you, so you have to go through it. It can be tedious, but this rang alarm bells because this emphasis on electronic medical, was it 2 years ago or three? I can't remember, when they had that huge glitch when someone hacked into the across the country.
And people's records were compromised.
It doesn't fill me with confidence. On the one hand, I can understand, you want to try and streamline it, but it just leaves us very vulnerable to hacking. Apparently, the quote here, it was part of the Health Digital Investment Plan launched by Mr Brown yesterday, which he called a 10-year pathway for funding to shift from a state of high risk and inefficiency to a modern, unified, resilient digital. He's just a soundbite saying things he knows that resonate with people. Because on the face of it, you think, well, that seems quite reasonable. Who wouldn't want us in an efficient health system? We all do. But it's the machinations going on around. When the hospital has been dealing with frequent system crashes for months, which staff say is putting patient care at risk and attending waiting time.
Yeah.
A glitch at Palmerston North pushed staff back to using pens, paper and whiteboards. which was kept from the public. Labor criticised the delay at the time, and they point out in the article, but by 2018, under the new Labor government then, it still wasn't rolled out. So I'm afraid Labor have shot themselves in the foot with this. Apparently, 3 years later, in 2021, $400 million was allocated mostly to revive integrated electronic health records, with another business plan created for an upgrade system called HIRA. HIRA was paused in 2024 prior to its second tranche, with less than a third of the work done and only one of the intended 15 services upgraded. And there wasn't there a scandal about... Oh, no, I think something else, sorry. Uh-huh. But it doesn't fill me with confidence. On the one hand, I can see, yes, it... But the reality is these systems are so vulnerable
unless the system is secure.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah, and this tells me that he said government is promising patients a single electronic medical record.
Hmm. What? So one single one, you take it out, and it all comes to a grinding halt.
Yeah. What happens when the system is breached in a way where patients' confidential information is compromised?
Which has happened in this country.
And so what happens then? What's the backup plan?
Yeah.
Or are we going to suffer this situation where health agencies are almost held to hostage to pay these people to release the information?
Yeah.
Which I think did happen.
And no guarantee that will happen, the information would be released.
And what happens to the information that they get?
Yeah.
Who do they out-on sell it to?
And then, so accountability. Who? It doesn't fill me with confidence.
Yeah, I think the guarantee they're promising a system, but
they got no reason to give us that promise because they can't guarantee it.
How secure is that system going to be?
Yeah.
Before even rolling something else like that, like this out. Has a system been put through a test of possibly security breaches? What could possibly go wrong in the system, apart from a hack or the system crashes, for example? What do you do then?
The analogy I could come up with is a few months ago, there was a computer hacking in Europe and all the airports in Paris, London and Berlin shut down.
Yeah, just like that.
And before that, there was somewhere in Japan or somewhere in the Far East, the same thing happened. Things just shut down, the whole system's ground to a halt.
And planes are grounded.
The chaos.
Passengers are irate and whatever else.
Yeah.
So this could be potentially the same sort of thing.
Well, it just seems like an Achilles heel.
Yeah. We're so reliant on technology. We don't have a backup plan.
No.
I'll have to write a bloody letter by hand. I mean, I have to phone the person up. I can't email them.
Yeah, it doesn't fill me with confidence.
No. Yeah, systems can be hacked.
Yeah, any system.
Any system, and we know that. It doesn't matter how sophisticated your...
You're still relying on the trustworthiness of the people who are implementing this system.
Hackers will try any way of breaching a system.
And most hackers sometimes end up getting out of employment, working directly for these sort of companies, because they're hackers. They know how to get through.
Yeah, they're talking
about... It's like setting a poacher to catch a poacher.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Employing a crook to catch a crook, What did it say? There's a quote, I'll quote this. One program would be rolled out a month. So what are the checks and balances with that rolling out?
During the transition period going from one system to another, it opens up a whole account variable to minefield.
You're right. I think we have fears when we
reliance on this sort of systems.
All government departments are relying on electronics. So we've heard...
The system goes down and everything grinds to a halt.
Yeah, work and income had this problem. Yeah. The system sort of ground down to almost down to a halt. Yep. And what happens then?
Oh, sorry, yeah. You have to come back. You know?
Yeah, well,
I've got no money. I'm sorry, you have to come back.
You have to. Can't we go back to the old ways?
No.
And do it that way. Have a backup plan.
Yeah. Well, that's what some of these hospitals had to resort to. They had to resort to old technology, pieces of paper and pencil.
Well, that's the backup plan.
Yeah.
Because they also talk about other things like they could interfere with technology. There's like particular types of effect, like the sun, solar effects.
Mm.
Solar storm.
Or magnetic storms.
Yeah, that could shut systems down.
Yeah.
So you need to be wary of that. But yeah.
But this total reliance on, it's very short-sighted. It's just sound bites. They've got an idea, they want to sell it, and they'll say anything of it, everything and anything to convince the people. Oh, yeah, you must be right.
Yeah. One thing I got here before we continue with you, Mick, was COP 30.
What a waste of time!
That was a bloody waste of time.
Complete and utter. They had a pre-announcement or something about the environment, and by the time the conference finished, the lobbies from certain invested interests who happened to be in the
fossil fuel,
got it watered down. So it became meaningless.
Absolutely meaningless. The comment would be, why the hell were they there in the first place?
They go every time. They shouldn't
be there.
No.
Because they're always going to stymie it.
Yeah.
Because of vested interests.
And the people at and America boycotted it. They didn't go to this.
Yeah, because
because Drill Baby Drill, DJT, as he calls himself now.
Oh, the childless one.
Yeah.
Doesn't believe in climate change. He thinks it's a myth.
He thinks it's a hoax. The whole thing's like a scam.
But
you're wasting your time thinking that anything's going to come of these conferences.
Yeah.
It's every time it's watered down, and the governments who do start off with staunch buckle.
And we
the people pay the price.
And even this country here, given its oil and gas exploration.
Yeah.
We're basically in that same boat. One of these clowns is our so-called climate change.
Oh, great!
Yeah, that clown there.
Yeah, that fills me with so much confidence.
No, it does. Yeah, no, yeah. And he sounds rather incompetent at his job anyway. So
I'm beginning to think they all are.
Yeah, those who have intention and the small nations can. Yell and scream and carry on, but they're going to be drowned out by the oil lobby, the fossil fuel lobby.
Yeah, again, they had small countries whose very survival is now getting to almost crunch time with sea levels rising and
temperatures rising.
And it just gets shut down. Just doesn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they draw for more bloody oil. And then they have these deals between Saudi Arabia.
And then these same individuals go on TV and be all... No, hemming in our hands and coming up with meaningless platitudes.
Yeah.
And they're getting paid for it. Gee,
what we should be doing is making sure that the fossil fuel lobby is on the back foot.
Because the right is on eventually the fossil fuel industry is going to stop because we're going to. They're talking about an oil glut next year.
Yeah.
Already speculating it.
Yeah, there was this. I remember from my high school days. Mm. Talking, there was a picture of it was sort of a caricature of the globe.
Mm.
On the top of it, where the North Pole is, there was like a drilling
rig.
And then it showed us how much oil was left, and it was kind of near the bottom.
Mm.
But I think it's not actually the case.
No.
But we've got the people who sell and promote clean energy need to almost take. Can charge, to drown it, basically drown out the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, because
and they're powerful
because the fossil fuels have been. I mean, they've played smart. They've used high power PR firms.
Mm.
But the trouble is, no one's interested in listening to the truth. Scientists don't have the ability to convey their findings in layman's terms to the people out there who should be listening.
Yes,
and,
I know.
And of course, the truth doesn't sell. It's sensationalism and sound bites.
Yeah, that's the problem.
This sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And you wonder what's going to have to shake people out of their apathy and open our eyes and ears to what's going on and what's being done to us in the name of money.
I think what would possibly may do it, because what we've been hearing...
A disaster, I think.
What we've been hearing are disasters in the Philippines. You said Sri Lanka. And what
I think somewhere in Cambodia. Yeah. They got hammered, absolutely hammered.
The disasters that are related to climactic effect should be happening within the European Union, United States, and a certain country in the Middle East. And I'm not talking about the Zionist state. I'm talking about Saudi Arabia.
I've had some severe floods in Slovakia. It was a couple of years ago. They had a severe drought, and the Rhine dropped so low that they couldn't transport goods up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the closest the impact has ever got to Europe.
But I think it needs to be more significant. Yeah.
Apparently Europe is 20 times warmer than it other parts of them.
Yeah, you people...
Because of all fossil fuels and all the junk we're spewing.
So it doesn't have to be just them. It has to be the United States.
Yeah.
Affected by a severe climactic episode, particularly in areas where they're, like Florida, for example, or in those sort of red states.
Yeah, Florida, Louisiana, Texas, go underwater.
Yeah, go underwater, disappear. What happens then?
Apparently Louisiana is just being eroded. It's just been eaten away every year. They lose 45 square kilometres a year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's what needs to really happen.
And nothing will change until it actually impacts, as you say, on these rich nations and also the people in charge.
Some nations do this cleaner energy type. We know that China and the solar farms. We know about that.
But they're trying to redress. They're fully aware of what they're doing is contributing to.
Yeah, they know.
But they're trying to redress it. They're trying to get away from that stuff.
It's a balancing thing.
Meanwhile, the West are lecturing. You're polluting. They've got the gall to stand there and accuse China or other places. Oh, you can't do that. Yeah. And they're spewing their filth.
Yeah, and even our government here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reliance on fossil fuels has to end now.
And unfortunately, there must be vested interests somewhere involved in this, and someone, no.
No, they just...
Well, governments have given up. They're in bed with these companies.
They've
given up any sense of responsibility.
So you always say, what would happen when your precious little estate in wherever disappears under the waves due to a rising sea level?
Well, those same individuals have private armies, they've been gated communities, and they're all trying to keep the rest of us out, who are trying to scramble up the hill to get away from the flow borders.
Yeah, but if it's their property that's impacted on by the climactic changes.
I don't think they think that far ahead.
Damn well should, but they said we've always had temperature fluctuations.
I saw that interview, documentary, I remember the guy saying, yes, these are all natural events, yes, but what he didn't say was that our activities has exacerbated those natural events.
Yeah, they just made them worse, yeah.
Yeah.
They did happen.
Yeah, they talked about Sri Lanka and said the intensities, they were getting floods in November, which is not normal.
Not normal for this year.
So the climate's definitely changing and caused absolute mayhem.
Yeah, we're not listening.
And it wasn't just loss of life and property. It was also arable land was under a sludge of polluted water.
Yeah, and that's going to be that's taking that away.
Takes that away. So food prices.
Arable land is either going to be affected by polluted water,
droughts, or
seawater.
Yeah,
yeah, and make it totally useless.
Yeah,
yeah. They don't get it, eh?
No. Yeah. Well, I do, but I don't think they care. Or just too blinkered. I just don't get it.
Oh yeah, you had a good Fred had a good. He put on a good performance of what these people are like by putting his hands over his and walking around.
Yeah,
I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
No, they don't want to know.
You do want to know.
Yeah,
it's a bit like the people who don't want to be remember. Oh, this happened in history before.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, I don't want to know. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else you got there, Mick?
Well, this is in Monday's Herald. Headline reads, MP Property Rich List.
Ooh!
Who are the top five biggest property owners in Poland? What types of properties did they choose and why does it matter? This is written by Chris Knox. The combined property investments of all New Zealand peas are worth $379 million, a Herald investigation. This equates to an average of 3 million across each of our 123 members of parliament. Surprisingly, the Prime Minister doesn't top the list. And the second page, I've got a whole list, so I'll give you the list.
Yeah, yeah, I want to know the top three.
Yeah. Okay, top three is Susie Redmayne.
That's a Tory.
Rangitiki, National MP, 24.3. Christopher Luxon at National Botany is 15.2. Barbara Kuiga, is that how you pronounce it? National. Taranaki, King Country, 14.6. Carl Bates, National. 13.6. I've got a list here. Paramjit Palmer Act, 11.1. That's just some of them.
Yeah.
It's a whole list of
the top three is what I'd like to know.
Yeah.
So it's her Redmayne.
Yep.
Followed by our so-called Prime Minister.
Mm-hmm.
And Kuiga.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all National MPs.
Yeah. And there are, and to be fair, there are some Labour MPs who do have multiple properties and they're well to do. They've got money, but you do wonder when these people are supposed to represent us in Parliament and some of the policies they're pushing through, that their lifestyle doesn't have any bearing on their decisions.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Vested interest.
Vested interest.
If you're voting on something that is directly...
Like a landlord, if you've got multiple properties and there's some legislation about rental properties...
You should abstain.
Yes. It's a conflict of interest.
It's a conflict straight away, yeah. Yeah. Or if you've got links to the tobacco industry, conflict of interest, pull away.
Exactly.
Alcohol, pull away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you shouldn't be... That should be one of the signs of, you know, if you've got a conflict of interest, you don't vote. On that subject,
and that used to be the case once upon a time.
Yeah,
but I don't think it's really enforced that much. They go through the motions, or I've declared my interest, blah blah blah. But that's as far as it goes. They don't recuse themselves from sensitive policy matters that they might have a conflict.
Yeah, and sometimes they don't want us to know about this.
Of course, they don't.
No, because these people. Who are deemed to be represent us, we the people, actually are not reflective of we the people.
No, they represent people like them.
They're not reflective of me.
No.
Or you, or some of the people that I deal with in my work.
Certainly not. No.
Yeah.
No,
they're not reflective. And you say that you're the government of New Zealand. Yeah, part of New Zealand.
That's just a platitude they just trounce out every now and again.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to appease the peasants.
Yeah, very much so. And people who vote should know that.
Mm. They ought to know it.
Yeah, when you
they ought to take an interest and say, "Oh, hang on, what this guy's got X amount of money, and he's involved in that policy or that policy."
It should be the same when it comes to local body elections.
Yes, exactly the same.
You should declare
your public office. You declare your interests.
Yeah.
Your property, whatever. So you're squeaky clean. Everything's above board. That's how it used to be.
MPs, so that's what they should be doing.
Yeah. How are we doing for time?
We are just about out of here.
Good news that Letitia James and Coney, their cases were dropped in America.
Oh, they're clap for that.
They're still going to have... They'll still appeal against the decision, but...
Yeah, and they had to come up against this Barbie doll attorney who was bloody useless.
Yeah. And she apparently wasn't officially... She wasn't technically officially in a position to bring those charges.
Anyway, she was... Yeah, and I'm thinking if they continue to bog Trump down...
Yeah.
Come November next year, some of his administration could be in trouble.
Yeah, with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who would you have thought?
Yeah.
Anyway, see you next week.
See you next week.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.